There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Good evening. You're listening to the Business Breakfast Nightcap. I'm Malcolm Taylor. In this hour, we're talking CSR, looking at how the business of doing good is changing across the Emirates. But first of all, we're looking at companies entering the burgeoning Saudi market as the kingdom plans to give out tourist visas.
Yesterday, I was saying I was going to try to take my other half. She's very resistant at the moment, so I'm going to have a bit of a selling job there to break her down to come with me. Yesterday, we heard this story and were wondering, well, who's going to go? How's it going to work? So I'm going to try and go in. Somebody who does go in regularly is Dan Coombe, the commercial director at the Media Advantage, who've opened an office in Riyadh recently to drive their Saudi efforts. Thanks for coming in. Look, I know you're working with some of the tourist boards in the kingdom, because there's several of them, not just one. Explain your interest and the involvement with the Saudi tourist market.
So we as Media Advantage, we are contracted by a lot of international media, including the likes of Skyscanner, The Economist, Travel and Leisure. And we work with companies within the region to help them promote themselves and their tourism objectives or their marketing objectives globally.
So you work for the agencies within Saudi Arabia to kind of put a positive gloss on Saudi Arabia for the international
media? Well,
to
report facts, I would say, because there's a lot of perception battles that we fight with Saudi Arabia. And there's a lot of good stuff happening there, especially in the last couple of years. So I think that narrative needs to be put out.
What are the good things that you see happening?
There's a lot of changes that have come into Saudi Arabia. And I think there was a lot of skepticism from us, from people outside, thinking whether the pace of change is something that the Saudis will accept or not. And we were expecting a lot of pushback on it. But we've seen, you know, with issuing driving license to women or opening up cinemas or, you know, these huge events that they're doing in Saudi, you know, you couldn't have imagined David Guetta playing in Riyadh, you know, a few years ago. All of that is happening. And the good thing to see is that Saudis have embraced that change and the pace of that change. So I think, you know, things would be different than what we perceive from outside, because, you know, there's a lot of demand from inside Saudi for a lot of these events and this stuff.
So, I mean, I want to go in, and I'm not sure how saleable Saudi Arabia is just at the moment, of course. There's some geopolitical stuff going on. But I quite fancy it, because I want to fly to Abha in the southwest of the country, hire a car, drive up to the Asir National Park, see the mountains, the Yemeni-style architecture up there, the rice paddies. Then I want to go down to the sort of the new coming Red Sea tourist destination north of Jeddah. Then I want to go up to Neom. I did the first part of that trip, the Asir National Park, 35 years ago, and I had no problems at all and loved it. And I'm wondering whether, in fact, I only encountered hospitality, actually, but I'm wondering whether or not things will have changed given the geopolitical situation. Do you think I'm being naive to sort of want to expect that I can go in, hire a car at the airport, drive around freely?
I think it should be easier now. And, you know, this is my experience going into Saudi on a weekly or a monthly basis. I think Saudi's opened up a lot more. And, you know, with the world being interconnected as it is, with Saudis, the record number of Saudis traveling outside, they are more attuned to the rest of the world, and they're more welcoming now. And, you know, as I'm sure they were in the past, but it's just you know.
Because actually next week is Saudi National Day, isn't it? 23rd of September. And we're expecting a 4-day holiday this year, and we're expecting an influx of Saudi cars onto Dubai's road.
Actually, that's one of the biggest reasons that's driven this whole tourism push. Because, look, I grew up in Saudi, and there never used to be a lot to do in Saudi. So all of these, you know, again, the numbers we look at, we have about nearly 2 million a year Saudis coming into Dubai. And most of them are, if you look at the numbers, most of them are actually families who come for entertainment, for shopping, for the attractions, to visit the Louvre or Dubai Parks and Resorts. All of that stuff needs to be built. And, you know, when they come here, they see how a country can actually do all of that while preserving or even strengthening its national identity. And that's something that they wonder, why couldn't we do it internally? And there's a lot of tourism dollar that needs to be, that's being spent outside in the region, which could actually be spent in Saudi as well.
Because there are a lot of things happening in Saudi Arabia, and it has changed an awful lot. But not one of the last times when I was in Jeddah, I got arrested for taking photographs of buildings.
Right.
Just to use a camera. I wasn't taking pictures of people or anything. But I was arrested, taken off to a police station. They threw my camera on the floor and broke it. And it was because I was taking pictures without a license, and you need a license. And I'm guessing that things have moved on. That was quite a long time ago.
Absolutely. So what we've seen in the recent history, there's been a big disconnect between the leadership of the country. And again, you know, we've had Malik Fahad or Malik Abdullah. And there was a big gap between, obviously, when they came into power, they're in their 60s and 70s, and Saudi's being led by the youth now. So with having Crown Prince MBS in, they're more fine-tuned and more tuned together in what they want and how they want to progress as a country.
So when you sit down with these agencies within Saudi Arabia and they say to you, look, go out and conquer the world, show Saudi to the world, what sort of things are they wanting to project? Is it the natural beauty? Is it the sort of
There's a lot of natural beauty. There's a lot of, obviously, there's a lot of work that needs to go in, and that will take, you know, it's all part of the Vision 2030, and they plan to have all of these, a lot of these sites will be ready in 2023 or onwards. But what they want to do is change the perception of Saudi as something which is closed off and controversial to something which is more open. And, you know, an extension of what they, you know, stuff that they do and what they know about Dubai and the UAE and, you know, similar. And what Saudi provides is a huge geography. So you have a lot of different, you have mountains in the north and you have obviously the Red Sea resorts that are coming up.
So and the head of the Red Sea Department did tell us at the ATM that in fact they're going to have two jurisdictions there. One is a Saudi jurisdiction, but they're going to have a sort of much more relaxed approach to try and attract people in to make it a little bit more Dubai-style-y.
That's true. And again, you know, this will be a lot of trial and error, I'm sure. You know, as things go on, they will evolve in the strategy. And again, as we said earlier, there's a lot of fear about the acceptance from the local Saudis. And what we've seen is the opposite. So there is a lot of, you know, people have welcomed these changes. So maybe in a few years, we will see that, you know, they might open up the jurisdiction too.
So when you're advising, because you are a media company, an advertising company, when you're advising these tourism boards on selling Saudi Arabia, where are you advising them to run their campaigns? Where do they want to target? What kind of campaigns are we talking about?
It's at the moment, there's a few different phases. So a lot of the push is towards internal tourism and regional tourism, and then towards the east. We're working with Travel and Leisure magazine in India, and there's this archaeological heritage site just north of Medina, which is basically, you feel like you're in Petra. We're working with them to bring influencers in from India and have cover shoots for the magazines and, you know, basically drive tourism to that. But again, infrastructure needs to be built very quick because currently there's no airport near it. You have to fly into Medina and drive 300 kilometers to it. All these sites are there, and then, you know, it depends on, there's a lot of tourism coming in from obviously the east. There's a lot of halal tourism that they expect to get. And some of the adventure sites that they're building, especially around the Red Sea, that's where I think this will be promoted a lot towards the Western tourists, you know, backpackers, adventure seekers, thrill seekers and stuff.
Well, thank you so much for coming in to talk about Saudi Arabia and the work that you're doing there to try and sell Saudi Arabia around the world. Dan Qayyum, the Commercial Director of the Media Advantage, thank you so much and good luck with your Saudi venture.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.
The Business Breakfast Nightcap
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Good evening. You're listening to The Business Breakfast. My name is Malcolm Taylor.
Do the right thing, do the right thing. Do it all the time, do it all the time.
We're talking CSR, having a look about how corporate social responsibility is evolving, as well as the reasons to do it. There's Business Breakfast Studio this morning, very much divided into cynics and non-cynics. And for once, I'm one of the non-cynics. That doesn't usually happen.
Well, you're in the minority because among Business Breakfast listeners...
That does usually happen.
The 77% of people think that CSR is a PR stunt, with just 23% being convinced that it's a genuine way to help society. Brandy Scott, why are you among the 23% who believes it's genuine?
Because I'm not bothered if people are doing it for a PR stunt. If you plant 1,000 trees because you are doing it because you want people to know you've planted 1,000 trees, you've still planted 1,000 trees.
Fair point.
Look, I mean, we've been looking at the website of one airport this morning who, as part of its corporate sustainability program, flew 21 mountaineers to Nepal to help them to climb a mountain, but at the same time creating sort of a huge amount of carbon footprint to do that. I mean, the four types of corporate social...
You don't know they didn't offset it.
We don't know that. Absolutely right, we don't know that. No, but it does seem a bit sort of counterintuitive to sort of suggest that by, you know, to help the planet, you're going to fly people across the world to climb a mountain. The four types of corporate social responsibility, I mean, sure there's more, but the sort of main types, everything falls under sort of environmental sustainability initiatives where you would plant trees and do all the sort of the green things, offset your carbon, etc. Direct philanthropic giving, where you would help charities, where you would help other people in need, companies in need perhaps, ethical business practices, paying your bills on time, making sure that the cash flow feeds down, making sure your staff are well looked after and happy, and also focusing on economic responsibility, meaning that you will keep your... It's sustainability of the company in some ways, which means that your employees, perhaps their children can stay, that it is going to be a company that can carry on for a very long time. Those are kind of the four general areas of CSR.
Lots of people have been in touch with us. Loads of messages coming in. For example, Hashim has been in touch, and Hashim says companies must change the way that they carry out these CSR activities.
The general public view such activities as a PR stunt, so the public themselves needs to be involved in such activities. So many of these activities are done by the company, but after the activity, let the general public who are visiting such places like the beach or the public parks, let them know that an activity happened on this day and this is the waste which was collected. And it took this much people and this much hours, so be mindful. And for the companies which are doing this for the sole objective of improving the environment, let them quantify their efforts by weighing the waste which was collected, and they can rate it against the next visit or the next waste collection which happens, so that they can know whether the waste has decreased or no changes has been done.
Makes a valid point.
I think in all of these sort of big chain issues, it's very hard to see how you as an individual or you as a small company can make a difference, really. I mean, I have green and black bins outside my house, and I do actually sort things out, and I generally... For what I think is sustainable, I'll put in the green bin, and recyclable, I'll put in the green bin. The other stuff goes in the black bin. And I suppose I'm doing my little bit. I've no idea what happens to that. It could all be put into the same sort of incinerator or on the same land tip. I've no idea what happens there. I'm assuming other people work along. But as long as every person and company does their own little bit and believes it to be good, then I think you're ticking boxes.
A rumor.
It doesn't sound much, does it? But
no. Well, a rumor has been in, and she says her former company does CSR activities. But she was convinced, actually, that they were doing it for the right reasons.
They're not doing it because they're saying, oh, I do CSR. They're saying, this is why and how our product is the best. And through that method, they've been able to kind of showcase all the great stuff they do. And I won't say that people shouldn't do CSR, because at the end of the day, as was said on the show as well, people want to know that, you know, what the products or the services or the, you know, the brands they build a relationship with align with their values when it comes to social responsibility. So I think it's good that companies do that. It just shouldn't be kind of a fad or an add-on. It should be something that's core to, you know, the soul of that brand or that enterprise.
It's interesting. We've had so many very cynical messages in from people saying, oh, here's one, I disagree, brands are doing it for the good of the world. You just have to ask whether or not they pay for filming and photography services to cover their CSR efforts. Do you know what? I don't think it matters. If it helps you get more clients, so what? If it helps you retain staff, so what? If it gets you a couple of headlines in the Gulf News, so what? If what you're doing is valuable, then fine. And in fact, if it does mean that people buy your product rather than another product, then great, because it comes self-selecting, doesn't it? That eventually you'll only have companies that are doing good things if people aren't buying stuff from the companies that are not.
The Business Breakfast Nightcap.
On Dubai I 103.8.
Good evening. This is the Business Breakfast Nightcap. I'm Malcolm Taylor.
We're talking about CSR. We're looking at the business of giving back. Very pleased to be joined in the studio now by our next guest, the founder and CEO of Companies for Good, Mark Riviera. Thank you very much for coming in. Tell me, I'm looking at your website. It says that you are set up in order to help companies, well, effectively move beyond profit. You say profit is no longer enough. How do you work with the companies and partners you work with?
Correct. So we are basically a social enterprise. We were created about 2 years ago. And what we do is we help businesses do good for either the community or the environment. We do this mainly through organizing team activities that have a positive social impact. So it would be like team building, but for a cause. How we do that, we partner with charities, social enterprises, and other experts within the community. We help them come up with activities that might be attractive as well as impactful. and we offer those activities to businesses. So in a way, we offer businesses the chance to do good in a fun and hassle-free way.
Give me a couple of examples.
So, for instance, one of our main clients has been Standard Chartered, the company, the bank. And with them, we did a range of different activities. So last year, for instance, we did a tree planting. We also did a beach cleanup. We took them in the mangrove park in Abu Dhabi, and they did kayaking. And while they were kayaking, they were collecting all the plastics that we found. We have made toys for refugee children. So lots of different activities that involve employees, create a lot of team bonding and engagement, and at the same time, do something good for the world.
How does a company make sure that when they're doing this sort of thing, that they're actually actively making a change and the right kind of change, rather than just doing something that looks good?
It's a very good point. And it's not so easy to measure the changes that we make. And that's definitely something that we're looking at, how we can quantify that change. But it's something that we can feel, we can see. So most people, when they come to our activities, first of all, between themselves, the level of bonding as a team and how much they know each other, it's not as much as we would expect. The level of energy between the team is quite low, as well as their knowledge and awareness about the topic that we are going to talk about. After the activities, we can sense that the level of energy has changed a lot. People are much more engaged, and they always tell us that they have learned about that particular topic, whether it's environment or the community issue that we have been touching upon. And so we have the hope that then once they go back to their offices, once they get back to their homes, they will actually behave in a different way thanks to the experience they have had through Companies for Good.
Mark, a lot of people are quite cynical about programs like this. We're asking our listeners this morning, do you think corporate social responsibility programs are A, genuine way to help, or B, just a PR stunt? And about 77%, say they think these kind of programs are just a PR stunt. What do you make of those statistics, and what can you do about it?
Yes, it's a very common thing that people think it's just PR. And so I would tell them that, yes, partly they're right. So there is a part of PR. Why not? I think companies and people who are doing good things shouldn't be ashamed of shouting out about the things they're doing. First of all, it's good to do something. And second of all, if you are communicating it to others, you might encourage others to follow suit and to also do good things. But also, like, I think it's really not good or unethical if you are shouting about something that you claim that you're doing and you're not doing it. However, if you are doing it, why that would be a problem? Like, if you are recycling at your company and you're saying that you're recycling, that's fine. If you are helping others and you're saying that you're helping others, that's fine. And so also, like, I would say to cynicals that I would invite them to join to one of our activities to actually, like, see the difference that we make. And I would ask them, like, instead of criticizing so much others that are trying to do good things, go out and do something yourself, because it's much easier to point and criticize rather than take action and do something for a better world.
How important is CSR as a retention tool? Is it becoming more important?
Absolutely. It's becoming more and more important. So most of the time our clients are HR teams, and they know that CSR is critical for attracting talent, retaining talent, as well as for keeping your employees happy and motivated and kind of loyal to the brand. As you guys were mentioning before, millennials care more and more about company values and what their employer is doing for the community and the environment. And very soon, millennials will be 50% of the workforce. And so it is something very, very critical.
90% of shoppers worldwide are likely to switch to brands that support a good cause, given similar price and quality. The Nielsen Corporate Social Responsibility Survey, which is produced annually, is one of those that has found this. How conscious are companies here in the UAE of that?
I think it's growing. So I've seen a big difference over the past 5 years that I've been here working in the CSR field. 5 years ago, there were only a few companies caring about beyond, like, just making profit, and they were doing it in a very kind of isolated way, like kind of philanthropy, just donating or doing things here and there. And now there has been a lot of improvement. Companies start to have like proper frameworks, KPIs, and they're taking things much more seriously because they know it's a trend that they need to be part of. And I believe, I mean, businesses at the end of the day are made by people. And we people realize that we need to do something. We need to do something to change things in this world, because if inequality keeps growing, if we don't close the gap of gender equality, if we don't do something for the environment, our kids will pay the consequences. And so it's people who run the companies who are realizing that we need to do something. And that's why more and more companies are taking CSR and doing good seriously.
What happens to that sentiment in tighter economies, though, when people are letting employees go, when budgets are stretched? Is CSR one of the things that gets dropped off the to-do list?
It is sometimes. And to my point of view, that's a big mistake, because that should be one of the things that you should actually increase. But it's the same with the way that companies see their employees, right? It's quite often, it's known that they call employees like their staff or their assets. And whenever there is a bit of financial stress, the first thing they do is they cut on people, or they reduce salaries, or they do other things that make people angry or more disengaged. That has a consequences. And at the end of the day, if a business is not treating their people properly and they keep them like happy and engaged, long term, it's not going to work. You can put a patch short term, but not long term. And it's the same with CSR. If you're not taking it seriously, if you don't make sure that your business is sustainable long term, then you are condemning yourself.
Mark Riviero, founder and CEO of Companies for Good. That's a good note to leave it on. Thank you for joining us.
The Business Breakfast Nightcap.
On Dubai Eye 103.8.
Evening, you're listening to The Business Breakfast. I am Malcolm Taylor.
We are talking CSR, and in particular CSR initiatives, looking at some of the initiatives that are happening globally and some of the initiatives happening here in the UAE. Joining us now in the studio is Wadi Haddad, the founder and CEO of The Box Self Storage. Wadi, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We'll get on to the tree planting that you're doing, so the what of what you're doing in a minute. But first of all, why are you doing this? Can you convince our cynical audience, 77% of whom think that CSR is just a PR stunt, can you convince them that what you're doing is genuinely to benefit society?
I just can share our experience and what we've been doing. We started our business about 14 years ago, and it all started with just helping someone with their what they needed. And it was more of a favor than a transaction. And we've kept that same spirit till today, where we're very helpful. We help people deliver what they, buying with purpose, basically. So we follow purpose rather than profits. It's a pursuit of a mission, and we're trying to make it easy for our customers, our vendors, and everyone to have that good feeling, that feeling good and buying with good.
It's interesting. That kind of chimes with what Aruma, one of our listeners, was saying about 10 minutes ago. She says CSR cannot just be, I'm paraphrasing, but she said it can't just be bolted on, something that you do two weekends a year. It has to be part of the core mission and purpose of the organization. So tell us about that, about this purpose above profits. Is that naively idealistic, or can it actually work?
Well, it's been working great for us. It's very easy to say, oh, we take a percentage of our profits and donate it. But what we've actually done internally is we've tied down all of our KPIs, all of our performance down to CSR. So for every transaction we do, we plant a tree. And for every that's just one thing we do, where we volunteer, we have interns. And but we're trying to make it simple for everyone. We produce a lot of carbon, and we need to offset that somehow. We're not here to save the world, but we want to do our little piece. And we believe if we do our small piece and everyone does their small piece, that will be a big effect on a larger scale.
In terms of this purpose above profit, Is it a trade-off between the two? Or does one reinforce the other? Can we have the perfect world, the win-win situation, where running a business based on purpose can actually increase profit rather than be taken off the bottom line?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's all tied down. Everything is tied down. We don't really look at financial statements much. It's very important, but we have our different metrics to increase our customer experience. We're all about making a difference. We're all about helping someone out. We are working with people when they're in the most time of stress, so we need to act as that relief for them. So having a passion over profit is very important, and it's aligned with the values, aligned with what you do every day. We don't simply take a percentage. For us, it's each and every transaction. It's each and every inquiry produces a result, which is then in line with the good that we do and the impact that we can have.
Are you profitable?
Yes.
If you were not profitable, would you still do your CSR program?
For many years, we weren't profitable. We're self-financed. We've been here for 14 years. And yes, I mean, it doesn't cost to do good and to help someone. I mean, what's the cost of that? Once you reach a moment when you can actually contribute, then yeah, that starts coming off the P&L. But you can always, I would say actually you can save money if you're driven by purpose, because you're helping volunteers, you're helping interns, you're helping someone out, you're helping causes, you're using your infrastructure to go after the mission you're after.
And you actually plant trees every time you win a new client, don't you? You've planted 188 since, what, June, is it, or May, or something like that.
Yeah.
How do you do that? I quite like the idea of planting trees, but I suspect that Dubai municipality might be a bit upset if I started planting them in the middle of their roundabouts or on their central reservation. Where do you find space to plant trees?
Yeah, so every month we have a tie-up with a company called Tree Nation, or an organization. And basically, what we do is we started it out with every storage contract, but now what we're doing is for every single transaction that we do, we plant a tree. So last month we supported...
But they're in Tanzania, are they not?
Yes.
They're not in Dubai.
Yeah, in Tanzania. And we just actually met one guy right now for Dubai. It was... we researched, we tried to find someone in Dubai. We had to make it simple. We had to make it simple to just simply pay a fee, plant a tree, and get our team now to start doing it here. And
I'll plant a few in my garden if you like.
Yeah, I was surprised, because it was so hard for us to do that. So I'm like, if it's hard for us, how is it for our customer?
Yeah. I was thinking, I wouldn't know how to even go about that. But I mean, so planting in Tanzania, how does the benefit come back to the UAE?
For every person we consume. We consume, and the more we consume, the more we produce CO2. So wherever you're planting, it's going to offset. I'm all about offsetting. I'm not about saving the world here. But every person, to offset, you need 20 trees a year. For every car, you need around 20 trees a year. And we're just making it simple to make it happen. So I think if you're helping the world, and that's a lot of what Dubai's mission is, we're very much aligned with that.
Wadia Haddad, founder and CEO of The Box Self Storage. It's a great initiative. Appreciate you joining us to share the details.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. We are back tomorrow at 6 a.m. with the Business Breakfast Breakfast.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.